Pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Agenda deletion. Agenda deletions, additions, or changes of sequence. Superintendent's remarks prior to public comment. Okay. What happened? And now we invite the public to speak on matters that are not on the agenda. We are happy you're here. And board members do not engage or comment on what the public has to say, but we are pleased that you are sharing your views with us.
Well, Casey Carlson from the Greater Santa Cruz Federation of Teachers, and I am just arrived back into town from Sacramento where we were logging, and I want to tell you that we have petitions ready to extend Prop 30, and this renewal of Prop 30 will be a 12-year renewal so that we can have a little bit of stability and predictability in our budget. It's also a more progressive tax because it doesn't rely on sales tax at all this time. It's all income, starting with $250,000 for single filers and $500,000 for households. And the money would go 89% to K-12 schools and 11% to community colleges, but there's a trigger that in some years where there would be higher revenue, it would also be shared with healthcare programs. So I just saw Allison before the meeting, and I will be getting her a draft resolution and hoping that the board will come out and support the extension of Prop 30. And if we end up going long and having a break tonight, you can come back and sign, and otherwise I will definitely get to you in the future. Thanks.
Thank
you. Hi there. Do I have to push something? Or do I
just talk
into it and it works? my name is Stacey Falls, and I am here representing the Science Teachers of Santa Cruz High School. Last week, we sent a letter to the Santa Cruz City Schools Board and administration about the dire state of the budget for science at Santa Cruz High School. Though you just got the letter last week, we actually began writing the letter like months ago at the beginning of the school year when we were told our unit budget. We, like back in October, learned that the entire science department at Santa Cruz High School had allocated only $500. That's $500 for six teachers teaching complex, lab-based science classes. It took us a long time to write the letter because we wrote it as a team, and six people working together on a letter just takes a really long time. And we understand that since we learned of that unit budget back in October, new funding has been made available to the school sites, including us. And we want to be clear that our letter to the board, despite its timing, was not in any way a commentary on that new funding. It was not commentary on how that funding was allocated or how our site administration allocated those monies. In fact, we really applaud them for working with us. We think that they're doing the best that they can with very little. Our concern is, and always has been, the materials for curricula are not prioritized in the budget. We don't want to seem ungrateful about the new money that has come our way, but we want to emphasize that what we need, what we've always needed, and what the letter was about, is consistent annual funding. One-time monies or big grants are great, but we need to know that every year we'll be able to have the funding we need to run our lab-based curriculum. Every single time we do a lab, we use up material that we need to restock. Especially at Santa Cruz High, where we teach an entire year's worth of material by the end of January, we do our purchasing in October, and having an unstable funding source or money that isn't available until January doesn't help us. We were upset about our lack of a unit budget, and we went directly to the board because our investigation suggested that the money allocated by the district for things like unit budget was particularly small this year. That's why you received the letter and not our site administration. We hope you will take our needs and concerns into consideration as you work through budget priorities for the next year. I wanted to just read a little bit of what the letter entailed. It's an edited version. We said that it's important that our minimum expenses be met or else our students are negatively impacted. Over the past several years, our budget has been consistently reduced, and we've had to make careful choices about which materials we can make do without and which were absolutely essential. It's possible that administrators who don't teach science don't understand that all we're required to purchase. Besides basic materials like pens, papers, dry erase markers, we also buy lab supplies. Everything from balloons to batteries to light bulbs to sugar to potassium iodide, which costs $100 every time we buy a bottle of it. Laboratory work is the most important vehicle we have for promoting science learning. We rely on you to help us be the best science educators we can, and we need consistent funding every single year.
I just want to say something about Jeannie Brown at Santa Cruz High School, I think the finances. And I agree with Stacy that the budget has been impacted a lot. And the schools are expected to pick more and more costs up. I don't know if this board knows, but in 2003 was the last time the district gave us an allocation for graduation. It's now the school's responsibility to cover all graduation costs. And for Harbor and Santa Cruz High, that's more money than Soquel because we have to pay for the rental of Cabrillo. Graduation costs us about $5,000 a year. The district used to pick that up. Now we have to pick that up. So it's coming out of the unit budget that you give us. We also have to pick up all the performing arts stipends, which next year they'll be picked up in the parcel tax. We pick up the activity director. That's not going to be picked up by the parcel tax. We also pick up Math Academy. Math Academy, the teachers work an extra 15 minutes a day. We're expected to pick up that $6,000 out of our unit budget. It doesn't come out of the district budget. Sometimes we get PTA to help us, sometimes we don't. So there's a lot of demands put on that unit budget. We've got, I think, $32,000 this year to run the whole school. All those things have to come out of it. We got paper, an extra money for paper this year. We spent $6,000 on paper. I think you guys gave us an extra $2,000 this year to pick up paper. So our expenses keep going up. So when something like the science department has all those needs, we don't have the money to get it. It's just not there. So to take back some of those things that the district used to pay for would help a great deal. So just something to think about when you're doing the budget for 16-17, to put some of those things back in and have the district pick them up and not have them come out of the unit budget would be great. Thank you.
I'm Jim Lodgeton. I'm a community supporter of the Santa Cruz City School. I'd like to bring your attention to the 26th annual Cabrillo Advanced Placement Program, where they will be honoring one of our graduates from Mission Hill Middle School this year, Monica Velasca. And this particular program has been a godsend for many of our schools over the last 26 years. I'm very proud to have been a sponsor for these years. And I'd just like to say a couple of things about Monica. She not only graduated from Mission Hill, but she also graduated from Cabrillo and then from San Jose State. And now she's working for the Monterey County Juvenile Probation Department. Again, it's another excellent example of how this school district extends itself and works with a big many different and varied groups to meet the needs of our kids. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Jim.
Good evening, board. Thank you for all you do. My name is Ron Eshi. I'm the president of the Santa Cruz High Cardinal Club. And my wife, Katie, is handing out some papers to you. And I volunteer our time raising money for athletic safety gear for the school sport programs. I know in researching a previous minutes back in August of 2013 that the board doesn't have anything to do with the hiring or letting go of at-will or walk-on positions such as coaches. And we understand that's an administration and handled by the principals and HR department and superintendent's office. But at that time, in the minutes, they had 10 walk-on coaches that they did not renew due to performance. But however, we still want to talk about tonight, real briefly, is my wife and I are here tonight to make you aware of the deep concerns we have for the current Santa Cruz High girls varsity basketball coach. We have two daughters that play basketball at Santa Cruz High, one on the varsity, one on the JV team. JV team, she's having a very positive experience, and they're doing great. The varsity daughter on the varsity team is having an extremely negative experience from her coach, who rarely speaks to her. Some of the negative coaching traits include continued use of profane language toward the players, public demeaning of players, and verbal abusive statements on and off the court, poor communication to parents and is unapproachable, and then we've been in receipt of negative statements about our coach from third-party people as well. On Friday, January 29th, it is our understanding that the coach was spoken to by our assistant principal about her profane language. That same day, there was a basketball game. At halftime, the coach was inappropriate again, pointed her hands toward our daughter, and yelled, "I'm going to F and curse," and it's part of my language, "I'm going to F and curse, and you can go crying to your little F and little daddy about it." Our daughter told us she was instilled with fear and wanted to break out in tears, but she held together until leaving the meeting room, whereby she was embraced by another player who cried basically with her about what happened to her. After the game, a third player was also in tears, wanting to quit the team, and actually another parent is here to talk about that. The coach seems to have a pattern. She coached at Cabrillo. They let that program go and basically came unfunded because of possible rumors. This is all rumors that possible actions there. Our daughters love to play the sport of basketball. They've been playing since fourth grade. My oldest just told me today that if this coach is back this next fall, she will not play. It's very unfortunate. In front of you have a coach's handbook, which she's clearly violated. A number of statutes within the district here, which she's clearly violated. So we hope you take a look at that and for the future coaches that we hire. Thank you.
I'm just going to interject, Mr. Eshi. I just want to assure you that we take parent concerns very seriously, and investigations take periods of time, and we haven't conducted a full investigation on this yet, and for that reason, too, this is a personnel matter, so I ask that you bring it to us as opposed to have this be a public conversation.
Hi, my name is Norma Gonzalez, and actually I sent a letter, I don't know if you got it, and I haven't gotten any response. I don't know if you got it or not, so that's why I didn't know what to do, and I came here. First of all, I went to the counselor because I very trust him, and I was afraid to speak up, and he advised me what to do, so I did that, but I didn't hear nothing from them either. That's why I went to the next step and sent you emails about the letter that I brought, and I didn't hear nothing either. So I want this issue to be very, very take care about it, because I think it's a bullying coming and leaving from the coach, which I don't like it. And as the other parent said, it makes my daughter feel bad, and I feel very upset when she cries because what the coach said. And I think it's a lot of ads saying like it's because of bullying, and maybe it's, if it's a teenager bullying, like my daughter can deal with another teenager but not with an adult, which is not good, because they should trust that person, but they don't know what to expect about her. So that's why I'm here too. So maybe I won't read this, but because you already know like my issues, but I really want this issue take care of, because it's a bullying problem and it's a very bad consequence for the players and for the autism of my of the player, including my daughter. So, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there more members of the public?
Hi. My name is Joe Williams. Speaking on behalf of myself, but a representative of the Resource Center for Nonviolence informally. There's been a flurry of emails that kind of been going around recently, and I understand that most of that is inaccurate info about release of student information and access to student information by outside agencies. So one thing only thing I have to say about that is when it becomes appropriate, please put that on the public agenda before you make any changes to that. Any change to that policy kind of deserves some public scrutiny, especially due to like immigration status of students' parents and other privacy concerns. So that's step one. I guess I want to reintroduce, I've been doing GI Rights Hotline Counseling and Truth in Recruitment presentations in this area for about 15 years. So I would like to invite you and everybody from the sound of my voice here to contact us if you would like presentations that counter military recruiters' presentations. So what we've been doing, just a further explanation, the GI Rights Hotline, we're a local branch of a national organization that counsels enlisted service members and their family members with problems that they have with the military. They're usually in distress when they call us. So we have a big background of the realities of military service. So we can come to the schools. We have the stories we hear from the hotline that we can tell. We have video presentations. Sometimes we can get veterans to come in as well. And we can also give presentations about alternative money for school as well. So this might be too much to ask, but I'm going to ask it. We would love to be contacted whenever recruiters are on campus. If they're tabling in the quad, if they're making a presentation to a school classroom, we would love to have equal time to come in and give the alternative view. We can be contacted through the Resource Center for Nonviolence, their main phone number, and you can make an appointment through them, and they can get in contact with us. So spread the word, and hope to hear from you. Thank you.
Hello. Well, I know as educators, you are totally committed to the education of the children of our community, and I thank you for that. My name is April Burns. I'm also a GI Rights Hotline counselor. I've been counseling families and military members for over 20 years. We help people navigate through the very complex legality of the DoD system, separate legal system, for discharges and for everything from rape, which would be to suicide, and everything in between. So we have a real understanding of some of the issues that young people face when they go into the military. And what happens is most of them are completely unprepared for the reality of military life. This has a lot to do with the kind of misinformation that recruiters are giving to students. Vulnerable, susceptible young people. And I understand that that what's happening now is this information is given to recruiters. They can contact a 17-year-old and talk to them without their parents there. They can come on a campus and they can say whatever they want to about the military and military service. They don't give the full picture. They'll promise them the moon. They'll tell them they can get training, they can get money. None of these things are completely true. And the other side of it isn't given. It is not a job. This is not a job opportunity. This is 8 years of a commitment in which one would give up their civil rights and, you know, and they would become GIs, government issue. Our children deserve the truth. They need to know, if they join the military, what it may entail, how it may affect their lives. As educators, I would ask you to assume that responsibility. And so if they come into the campuses, I think that there needs to be someone there who is listening to them, who is monitoring the information that they are feeding to our vulnerable youth. I hold you responsible for that. I will do my part. I will be at a campus. I will continue the work that I'm doing. So I just want you to know, yes, we have people who are willing to come into schools and speak with classes and help teachers understand this. And so truth and recruiting is what we're asking for. Just the truth. And I think our students deserve it. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Truth and recruiting, I like that. That rings very, very well with me. My name is Barbara Bush, and I'm here with the cell phone task force, and I'd like to address another safety issue in these financially challenging times about a safety issue that affects all the children in the Santa Cruz County school system, and that's the exposure to 24/7 microwave radiation. This is all not looked at, but it affects learning, comprehension, behavior. Independent research shows that this radiation, which is a form of radio frequency, but a far more damaging form called microwave radiation. This is used in your microwave ovens. Imagine placing yourself in a microwave oven day and night. This is the environment that we're now living in. There's a massive deployment process underway by the telecommunication companies. And their goal is to turn every telephone pole into a cell tower. This is not just about cell phone reception. It's far, far more, and that's a whole other subject. But what I want to bring up today is the risk that our children are exposed to on a daily basis. Many of these towers are either on site at the school or within 1,000 feet, or certainly within a mile of the school. I pass many schools on a daily basis, and I see this directly. The health studies on exposure to this microwave radiation are staggering. Independent research shows that this radiation causes cellular stress and damage, DNA damage, blood-brain barrier disruption, increased cancer and tumor risk, decreased melatonin, insomnia, abnormal heart rhythm, strokes, altered brain waves, impaired learning and concentration, irritability, headaches, cognitive difficulties, memory and concentration issues, links to Alzheimer's, and impacts on wildlife. You got to remember, this affects all life, not just humans, but plants, bees, agriculture, everything. And so there are no public health studies showing that this technology is safe. It's shown to be within the FCC limits, which are set extremely high, 10 times higher than most of any other country in the world, excluding Canada. There is a staggering amount of medical scientific data showing that cancer rates are skyrocketing. And this has to be looked at and taken seriously. And we should demand public health studies that show this is not a danger to our children. And these results are cumulative, permanent, and serious. And many children are being, their lives are being destroyed by this day by day. And I spoke to medical doctors, child psychiatrists, and it's a serious threat to us all. So I encourage consideration on this issue, a lot more information to follow. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Noreen Winkler, and I see a lot of familiar faces. It's nice to be in the room. I retired from the Santa Cruz City Schools 5 years ago. So I wrote a letter this afternoon that some of you might have read, and I know that it had misinformation. So I don't want to read that letter. What it was addressing was the release of directory information and opt-in, opt-out for military recruitment. But I just wanted to say that I'm still committed to this kind of work and these kinds of questions on behalf of our students and their families. And I'll probably be working with April and other people to try to make the information get to the students as I believe that it should. And that's all I wanted to say. I apologize for not having the correct information when I wrote the letter. I spent a lot of time on it. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Superintendent, of course.
Hello, my name is Irene O'Connell. Thank you also for trying to get in touch with me. So I also heard this information, but something that has been an issue is addressing the school-to-prison pipeline. And I am currently located at the Santa Cruz City Schools site, Santa Cruz High, as a Barrios Unidos Outreach Coordinator, in which I hold a classroom Mondays and Fridays as a self-referred safer space where kids can access school supplies, free snacks that we're able to provide, and a safe space to have dialogue and mentorship. We engage them in activities and community partnerships and things like that. And so a big reason why Barrios is there is to be another barrier in that school-to-prison pipeline, because we recognize that it's so easy for our students to slip through the cracks, especially at a high-performance school like Santa Cruz High. It's easy, and I've seen a lot of my students go to continuation schools when you know, there could have been other alternative ways to engage that student. So, and I see the direct results of some of our students going that route. And as a mentor, as a community member, there's all kinds of things that, you know, I wish I can do, but I'm sort of limited. So I look forward to continuing to engage with Santa Cruz High counselors and staff there. They've been very supportive of our program. And just want to introduce myself as a resource, a community member who's really passionate about seeing the students succeed and stay out of the system, because I'm also a counselor at Juvenile Hall, so I get to see students in, you know, all kinds of places. And so, yeah, committed to their success. Thank you.
Can you say your name one more time?
Irene O'Connell.
Irene O'Connell?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Anyone else? Okay, Superintendent report.
Good evening. I wanted to start sharing that the community meeting, the board community meeting that was scheduled for last night at Galt was rescheduled for next Tuesday at Galt because El Sistema was performing at the Warriors during halftime, so our student musicians from Galt and much of the Galt community were at the Warriors last evening, and I understand it was a wonderful event. Facilities Master Planning Community Meetings. I missed the Warriors event because I was at a Facilities Master Planning meeting. The meetings are continuing into this week. We've had about 56 parents, community members participating in discussions so far. Others are emailing in input. A next step is going to be a parent survey to develop priorities, and the progress is being made towards developing a plan, and I know many of you have been attending those meetings, and we appreciate you being there to hear from the community as well. Last week, I attended the Superintendent Symposium in Monterey. This symposium annually provides superintendents with legal updates, workshops on best practices in all areas of district leadership, keynote speakers on innovation and education, and then an opportunity to network with superintendents from across the state. And I think for me that was the most valuable part of that time away. And also to get some focused quality time with our local county superintendents to talk about current issues in the county and current issues that we're all working on together. Last Saturday, January 30th, was the Latino Role Models concert conference. The Rio joined the Mexican Consulate, County Office of Education, and us in sponsoring this conference. There's going to be a presentation tonight, so I'm not going to say much more except that it was a wonderful event. Sarah Emmer, the director for the Santa Cruz Live Oak Youth Violence Prevention Initiative, met with me last week to discuss progress on their work groups. Eileen and Allison have been participating in this initiative, and most, as we looked at the recommendations together, it's very much aligned with our district goals and the work that we're already doing. And it's exciting work to be doing as a county and collaborating with other agencies, and I thank everyone involved with that. Last week, we also, Angela, Eileen, and I met with Chief Vogel, other Santa Cruz Police Department leaders, and Chief Deputy District Attorney Rob Wade to proactively discuss how we keep our kids safe around cyber issues, cyber safety issues on our campuses. And tomorrow night at 6:30 at Santa Cruz High School and Wednesday night at 6:30 at V40 Middle School next week, Officer Brett Northrup will be providing cyber safety classes for parents that Eileen has arranged, and they've been advertising from all of our campuses. We really appreciate the collaboration with our parents and the police department and the DA's office as we work to support kids and proactively educate parents and make sure that we are all working together to keep kids making good choices and keeping themselves safe on online venues. Last Thursday, we had our first ever district-wide RTI retreat. It was site leaders, RTI coordinators, counselors, coaches. It was really a great day of conversation, and we had a few site leaders involved in, central office leaders involved in designing that day in a really different way that allowed for a lot of conversations. No breaks and a working lunch. And everybody was completely engaged all day as we talked about where we are in this work of providing tiers of support and core program for kids and what our next steps are. It was exciting collaborative time. Last Friday, I sat on an education panel for Leadership Santa Cruz. Leadership Santa Cruz is an annual event of different community leaders that learn about different areas of the community, and last week's focus was on education. We've asked a lot of questions about Common Core and facilities and school safety and LCOP process and all those kinds of things, and it was nice to be able to hear questions and the, what is of interest to our community leadership. We also, I met on Monday with Superintendent Tamara Taylor from Live Oak with Michael Watkins to discuss some of our regional programs in the SELPA, our special education programs. And I'm going to be providing you more information on regional programs and our effort to look at providing best programming and strategically allocating resources in the coming month. Thank you.
Student representative report.
Hi, everyone. So, since our last meeting here, everyone's survived finals and we've moved on to new classes, which are fun and exciting and engaging, and no one's stressed out about homework yet, so we'll see how long that lasts. The spring musical at Santa Cruz High is about a week and a half away from opening, so that's where I've been for the past 3 weeks, painting things. And there's a lot of anticipation for that because we have a really big cast this year, so I would recommend you all see that. I was privy to a discussion today about the new, I don't know if it's a district filter on YouTube, interrupting like material that certain classes were going to talk about in regards, I think, like just part of a class discussion, and like content is blocked, so I'm sure you'll all hear about that from other people. I guess we've all heard about the facilities a lot, but now there's a hole in the ceiling at Santa Cruz High from the time we put a bucket under a leak and then the bucket smashed through the ceiling. Minor class discussion. That class is working around it. It's a big, it's been cool to see how everyone's worked around it and kind of ignoring it, so we're moving forward from that. in my econ class today, we were discussing public good, and our teacher decided to engage the students in the learning process, specifically at Santa Cruz High, by asking how they would enact public good on campus. And let me tell you, those ideas were very interesting. We had everything from expanding parking opportunities to implementing a cat cafe on campus. I didn't explain why we can't do that, but that's an idea that came up. And with the return of warm weather, we've seemed to remember why school spirit is such a great idea. So this Friday there's going to be a circle of friends meeting in our quad, and the theme is like National No One Eats Alone Day. So that's cool. I'm looking forward to that. And a couple of weeks ago, I had a meeting with my principal, Ms. Edmonds, and we were talking about the very unique approach to school spirit that Santa Cruz High has, where while we may not perform the best at rallies or on spirit weeks, the student body is very engaged and very ready to engage in issues that matter to them, which is why I'm very pleased to announce that we're bringing back Free Speech Fridays at Santa Cruz High, which was a thing in the 80s and 90s, I believe. And what happened then is we had debates on the front steps of our school every Friday, and apparently, you know, like neighbors would come and watch, and we got press coverage, and the front lawn was just covered with people, and it was students, you know, writing speeches and delivering speeches, and it's going to be really cool that we implement that this spring. Thank you.
Thanks, Ella. Board member reports.
I just would like to say I'm very pleased that Officer Northrup is being able to present to Santa Cruz High. I attended that workshop last year and suggested to Cabinet that we bring this to our schools. So it's a bit of an eye-opener, and it's definitely for parents only, but I'm pleased to hear that's happening. And then on that note, the Technology Task Force is meeting next Tuesday. I think it's at 5:30 at the Brent 40, is it in the library? I should have known this before I started talking. Is it in the library or, do you know where is it?
It's the BN.
It is the BN, okay. 5:30 prior to the facilities meeting.
Sorry,
that's all. It's the Innovation Center at the Brent 40 BN.
Thank you.
And that's all.
Good evening. I attended the community meeting with VLAC parents way back on January 21st. Dr. Meeker and I were there, and we must have had at least 30 parents that were there, and they were very vocal and had lots of ideas and comments to make. And they brought written comments from parents at Westlake, the ULA, and Santa Cruz High, from the ELAC groups there. So we got a lot of really engaging input and ideas from those parents about what's working well and what they have concerns about. So I really appreciate their input on their children's experiences. And then just recently, I was at the Harvard High School Master Plan Facilities meeting, and it was really fun to kind of think big in terms of what we'd like to do with our facilities and our schools. So that was really fun. What we'll actually end up doing may be very different than that, but we were able to think outside the box and imagine basically what we want our schools to be if we could secure the funding to do that. So that was great.
One of the important developments for the district is, from my limited perspective, is the idea that we should consistently hear from educators who are in the front line. So I'm very pleased to rename and welcome Gino Raugi, who was a master teacher. We're not allowed to use that word. He was a cooperating teacher at B40 Middle School for a long time. Now he's the district tech coach. And David Norman, who's a first-year teacher at B40. It's really exciting. Union reps, one thing we used to have in you, no offense, but it's really, really exciting to have teachers in the audience and to consistently hear from you, because that's the only way we really know. And so thanks for being here. We know that you guys have long days, and we look forward to your presentation, David and Gino. Thank you. And Gino looks relaxed. I joked with him that I'm sure he's working very hard, but classroom teaching is exhausting, and I'm so very happy that things are working out. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Hello. I've had the opportunity to attend some of the facility master plans, and as Davey has put it, it is really wonderful to imagine what we would like to look like in the immediate future and then in the outgoing future as we look at our community needs and our student enrollment moving forward, along with securing a funding source, as the governor has indicated it's not going to come from him. So that was wonderful. I also would like to thank Amariah Hernandez, who took us around the Galt School yesterday. I really appreciated the first grade class. It happened to coincide with the first 100 days of school, so we got to see some curriculum that was really very special. I do have a request from the administration for information. In December, the board took action to increase the stipends for teacher supplies. And so if the board, if the district can please bring us information on how was the secondary level dollars distributed, as the per pupil formula worked very neatly in elementary schools, but for secondary needs, it was could be of interest. And then I'd like to also know the total cost to the budget to bring this particular supply stipend so that we can start planning for our future budgets and the needs for classroom supplies, and then, as Ms. Falls had pointed out, for science supplies and different supplies along that level. And then within that cost, if you could please break it down for the elementary cost and then the secondary cost. So it would be grade six, seven is how we do our secondary, so seven and above for that. I would also like to request, I know that we will be having a athletics presentation here soon. We usually have it in the spring. It may be a bit sooner. But in the report, I would like to have the question answered that I've asked previously, is what is the philosophy of Santa Cruz City Schools athletics? I'd also like to see the handbook under which we will be working as a school amongst coaches and administration, and then for the parents and the greater community. And then just, it would be helpful to see what a hiring packet and job descriptions are, because this is such a large program and we employ so many different employees who directly affect our students. I just would like to see that. And then an update on what the review process is and the steps that we have for these coaches, and which are essentially employees to our students. I wrote it down, Nancy, and I'll bring it back for you, but I hope I said it concisely enough. I really appreciate those efforts that you take for us. And then I'd like to acknowledge again all those who worked on it and our administration for helping to bring the solution with Measure O and the parcel tax in order to fulfill the needs for our athletic programs in the secondary. So thank you.
Yeah, I attended the Harbor High School master plan presentation. Trevor, Clay, and Robert did a great job informing us and leading a discussion. And I just love it when somebody says think big. It was really fun. Schools Plus, we discussed future fundraising at the January meeting. And grant awardees included Gail Alimo at Soquel High School for a biology and environmental science program, and Katie Scowcroft and Barbara Lawrence at Galt for the purchase of books to use in a community reading project. And tomorrow we discuss the application process. Delta, they just completed their very short, intensive winter term. Inside Education visited, and they commented on the inclusive nature of Delta and the focus on exploring life's options. Over 60 students are concurrently enrolled in Cabrillo courses, and they include classes such as English 1A, Spanish 2, Japanese, Psychology, Women's Studies. Delta seniors completed their Cabrillo College Math and Language Arts assessments. Their scores will be compared to the scores that they received when they took the assessments last year. so Delta can use that information to guide their curriculum and instruction.
I also went to the facility meetings at Bayview for Mission Hill and Bayview, and at the small schools yesterday for Natural Bridges and small schools. And I encourage anybody who has a chance to go because it's really great to hear the ideas that the staff have for our campuses and to really dream about what they can look like with a little bit of fixing. I would like to kind of piggyback on Patty's request a little bit in that I had trouble with this supply giving out in terms of understanding the teacher groups, the school groups that were not the teachers themselves that made some of the decisions about group allocations of the supplies. And it seems to me like there's several groups we call teacher leaders here, and they get mixed up easily, so the people would talk to me about it, and they'd be talking about different groups. So if I would like to know who at which schools made those decisions. I'd like to know what the process is so that I don't get confused in the future. Okay, I was approached by Chris Brenner from UCSC, who runs the Center for Collaborative Research for an Equitable California, and he came to me to talk to me about some Santa Cruz County high school students who developed an app for preparing for college and the requirements needed and college applications, financial aid. I saw the app. It was exciting. I would like to request that the administration take a look at it and see if it's something that we could present here, have them present. They're all high schoolers, and they did something quite simple and marvelous, and it's free. And I think that they're looking now to get people to know it and to begin to use it, and so I would like to be able to see the board be able to see it. And in your papers, the board has that's a different one. You don't have that one yet because it's going to Chris. It was a very exciting talking to him about it. Made me feel good about the future. Okay, the other thing is the Nurse Family Partnership, which Supervisor Bruce McPherson and Supervisor Ryan Coonerty, for whom I take some credit. it's a new program that they managed to get the original funding for, and I went to the meeting yesterday when the supervisory board approved it. And it's a program which will, for the most at-risk new mothers, give them wraparound nursing services from pregnancy through the second year of life, which is the period of time where we know the most development happens cognitively, socially. And it is an excellent program that's been around for 37 years. It's evidence-based, and it has, I'll just read you just a couple, these kinds of outcomes: 59% reduction in child arrests at age 15, 39% fewer injuries to children, 48% reduction in child abuse and neglect, 50% reduction in language delays with children, 67% reduction in behavioral and intellectual problems at age 6. So it's really had a dynamite effect where it has been implemented, and now it's going to be implemented in Santa Cruz County. I went to the meeting, and the reason I gave it to all the board has it, is that I would like to request that we as a board support this, because right now they have supported the pilot part of it, and they are now building to get money for other things. And literally, everyone in this whole county that has anything to do with children was there weighing in their support that day, except for the school boards, all of which had not had a chance to hear about it yet. So I would like to, I don't know exactly if I request the superintendent to kind of get an idea whether we would put it on the agenda or whether individual board members want to.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I was thinking of a resolution. Okay. If that
unless there's no interest in it, I guess, is what it comes down to. So it's a very exciting program, and I think everybody should look into it. And I applaud the supervisors for following through on it. Okay, and then I just wanted to, last thing. I had an odd experience this week of being told things that I have been saying, and that the words had never come out of my mouth about the opt-in, opt-out program. So I just want to say that what I've been hearing is that I was setting to have it put on the agenda for discussion at this point, and I just want people to know that I have not asked for it to be put on the agenda for discussion, because at this point, there is no particular reason to. I have actually looked into getting information about how the opt-out, opt-in programs work, and what the ACLU and other groups that have been involved with this, including the Resource Center for Nonviolence, are thinking. And at this point, I am happy with what we have done. I think it's what we had to do fiscally, and it's what we had to do legally. But I'm also open to talking to anybody about it, and I'm trying to find out as much as I can. So I just wanted people to know that, so that if you hear things, you can always email me and ask me what I think. Okay, that's it.
Okay, I attended the Budget Advisory Committee and the Facilities Committee community meeting for Galt, De La Viega, and B40 Middle School, and it was fun to dream big and to see sort of just the different needs of the different schools and to think about how we move forward to make sure all of our facilities are ready to educate kids. I also attended the De La Viega PTO meeting last night and the Galt meeting a couple of weeks ago. I've been flip-flopping between those two to keep a sense of what's happening in a couple of our elementary schools. I was delighted to attend two performances, one an El Sistema performance at Galt Elementary School that just knocked me out, and then an Escapades performance at Harbor High, which is the Harbor High student-led dance troupe. So it is exciting that performing arts are alive and well in our public schools, and I know a lot has to happen infrastructure-wise, even with a student-led program, and I'm happy that we have those opportunities in our district. I had the best day at the Latina Role Model Conference. It was so inspiring. It was well attended. It was very moving. I want to thank the Senderos and all the agencies and groups that collaborate to make the event possible. It's an incredible event, and including Faye Silva and Nereida Robles, and I'm sure there's lots of people, but those are the two faces that I see working so hard on such an incredible event. And then finally, we had our second work group for the Santa Cruz Live Oak Youth Violence Prevention Youth Development Work Group. It's very exciting work with Sarah Emmert. And we basically have gotten to the point where we're moving the plan forward by narrowing to four high leverage strategies that will be supported and implemented across agencies to support kids in our schools. About it. Time for the approval of the minutes for our governance session on January 27th. Do we have a motion?
We approve.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? 7-0. It's time for the consent agenda. So are there items to be pulled for discussion?
Yes, I just would like to pull 817, the board policy update, and it's just in the language. I want to include a word, so we'll have a moment for that.
Okay. So we're moving on with the consent agenda. Are there any questions from the board on the consent agenda or questions from the public? Do we have a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Student recommendation?
Roll call.
Aye.
And so now we'll go to eight. What was it, Patty?
It's 8.17.
Yes, we'll do that after this.
So under the proposed revisions for the organization on board bylaw, we're in 9100, it's just that when we come to membership of the board, there's a paragraph that states the board shall consist of 7 members, of which members shall be qualified electors and residents of the city of Santa Cruz. 3 members shall be qualified electors and residents of the territory governed by the board, which lies outside the boundaries of Santa Cruz. And I think that in order to truly reflect the way our district works, after that word Santa Cruz, we have to put the word city, because our Live Oak feeder schools can have Santa Cruz addresses. So, for example, if I were to live in Live Oak, I will have a Santa Cruz address, but it doesn't differentiate between the in-city addresses and the out-city addresses. So, under members of the board, mm-hmm. in the middle of the paragraph when you come to it, mm-hmm. it says, which lies outside the boundaries of Santa Cruz, but it should say outside the boundaries of city of Santa Cruz. So that would allow for you to be in the county of Santa Cruz with a Santa Cruz address and still represent the outside.
So outside the boundaries of the city of Santa Cruz?
Yes.
Okay.
That was all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're going to, so do I have a motion to move approval with that adjustment?
Motion to move approval with that adjustment.
Second.
All in favor? Oh, wait a minute. Roll call.
Aye.
Student recommendation?
Aye.
Thank you. Just a little housekeeping.
And I just, clarification, Madam President, that approval was for final reading?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Sheila is going to read our gift.
The board acknowledges and is thankful for, a gift from Edward Dees for Westlake Elementary School, of a donation of $520 to pay for the transportation services for the first grade field trip to the San Jose Discovery Museum, and to Costa Nova High School, the Santa Cruz Seaside Company donated 3 iMac computers and 1 Mac Mini to the school. So we're thankful for all of those donations.
And Claudia, will you report on closed session actions?
The Board of Trustees took action on certificated, classified, and management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. The Board of Trustees heard information on expulsions 8/15/16 and 9/15/16, and the Board will return to closed session after this meeting.
Thank you. And it's time to vote, a public vote on the expulsions. The first is vote on expulsion 8/15/16. Is there a motion to adopt the recommended decision for student 8/15/16?
I move to expel student 8/15/16 to the end of the 15/16 school year and to suspend the enforcement of the expulsion to allow student 8/15/16 to return to their school of enrollment on strict behavior contract.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? 7-0.
Thank you.
Is there a motion to adopt the recommended decision for student 9/15/16?
I move to approve the expulsion of student 9/15/16 through the end of the 2015-16 school year and refer the student to a program of the County Office of Education.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. And it's now time to hear about a staff report on the Latina Role Model Conference.
Thank you, Madam President. It's my pleasure. It's an privilege to sit at the table in introduction. I'm going to do a brief introduction to this report. As we heard from our superintendent and president, this was a wonderful event. And we have with us tonight some of the parents and students who attended, as well as Mr. Kirk Coleman and Faye Silva, and they're going to be sharing the highlights of the day. But it was such a tremendous event that I do want to take a moment and just quickly share with you some of those images. So this is our sixth annual Latino Role Model event, and the propósito de este evento, the purpose of this event is really to provide both inspiration and information to our Latino families and students that will help them access college and career post Santa Cruz City Schools. We had with the support of the Consulado, four amazing role models. One of them was a 16-year-old student, Thomas Suarez, who shared with us the work that he's doing developing apps. The Consulado always creates a beautiful environment. This year we partnered with the Crocker Theater at Cabrillo with the Student Senate. We also had the support of Dr. Bruce McFadden, who is a vertebrate paleontologist, brought with him three Latino doctoral students who shared their stories. None of them thought that they liked science in high school, and all of them decided to become scientists. We were greeted, I rode the bus with some of our students, and we got there, we were greeted by two student groups from UCSC, Hermanos Unidos and Sigma Lambda Gamma. They spent the whole day with us. They set up, they served food, they told stories. They inspired our students just by being there. Some of the many students, the participants, we had 349 participants. Quite a crowd. The Consulado kicked it off, and our superintendent, Chris Monroe, delivered a presentation all in Spanish. And I also want to mention, this is a wonderful organization that is part of our district, the Senderos group, previously Vive Oaxaca. This group does the work of Latino role models all year long. And they came at lunchtime to share some dances. So I'm going to stop talking so that we can bring up our invitados, nuestros invitados. Quisiera dar la bienvenida a los alumnos y los padres de familia, los participantes de este evento que van a darnos sus recordatorios. So they're going to share with us some of the highlights of the day. I'm going to invite up first Mr. Kirk Coleman, who has been supporting us in the Office of Academic Equity and Categorical Programs and also provided tremendous support for this event.
Thank you. I'd just like to thank City Schools for being one of the collaborating partners on this event, and also for your tremendous support of Senderos in general. Our next event coming up is the Galaguetza on May 15th, so please put that on your calendar and come and enjoy. And with that, I'll invite our first student to come up and say a comment.
So the Latino Role Model Conference, it basically gives you the opportunity to explore different careers and see different people's stories and how they were able to get out in the real world. The basic message that they gave us was that no matter how many people tell you you can't do it or how many people put you down, if you have the will and determination, you can do anything with your.
Hi, my name is Jasmine Gonzalez. I'm a seventh grader at Grant Supporting Middle School, and I'm a position for Senderos. This has been my second year attending the Latino Role Model, and since the first time I went, I thought that it was a really good event. And
I just want to make sure it's on so that they can hear you, because what you're saying is important.
And
there we go.
Before I attended this event, I
I used to think that maybe I wasn't going to be able to do it or go through college and all that. And after attending these events, my mind changed, and now I think that I can do it and I can overcome any obstacles. And yeah.
Hi, my name is Daisy Magana, and I'm a student at Prince Edward Middle School, and I'm a dancer and musician for Senderos, and I attended the Latino Woman Conference, and I've been attending the Latino Woman Conference for about 2 years now, and before, I doubted myself, and I didn't think I would be able, you know, I didn't think I was like smart enough for school, if it was like worth doing in school or anything like that. And going to the conference really changed my mind, and listening to like all these people saying that they started like from like nothing and they're like really amazing people now, which really motivates me.
Buenas noches. Mi nombre es Gerardo, soy padre de familia. Dos de mis hijas pertenecen al grupo Sendero. Y yo quiero agradecerles por habernos dado la oportunidad de escuchar a estos profesionales, que no solo ayudan a nuestros hijos a motivarse a estudiar, sino que a nosotros nos abren la mentalidad del no se puede. De ahí salimos con sí se puede y vamos para adelante.
My name is Gerardo González, and I have girls in Senderos, the Senderos organization. I just wanted to thank you because you are supporting this event. This event inspired my two daughters and also inspired me as a parent. That and I believe that I can do and I can my girls can be successful.
Pertenecemos al grupo Senderos. Estoy muy orgullosa de poder asistir a estos eventos porque podemos apoyar a nuestros hijos a salir adelante y esperemos que sigan adelante con esos programas. Gracias.
My name is Claudia Valencia and I have a role with the Senderos organization. I'm just thankful and proud that I'm able to attend this kind of events, and I'm asking you to keep supporting this kind of events that help us to make our students be successful.
Buenas noches, mi nombre es Elena Magaña, soy mamá de Daisy. Es muy importante este grupo para nosotras porque, aparte de todo lo que dijeron ya mis compañeros, estoy de acuerdo. Hacen como que compartan más los papás con los niños. Tienen lugares a donde ir, cosas que compartir en común. Y pienso que es muy importante para todos. Gracias.
My name is Elena Magaña, and I'm Daisy's mom. I just wanted to let you know that I support everything that my the other parents said about this organization in this program. I just wanted to let you know that the use of this organization makes us to be in a community, makes us to share as a community, and they offer different kind of activities for a group of students and for our students. I wanted to add something. She doesn't say this. I just wanted to know that this kind of activities that they are talking about, it's after school activities during the weekends. Yeah. So Sunday, they are busy doing virtual activities or they are doing art activities. Thank you for all your support.
Thank you.
And I want to keep Faye up here for just a moment, if that's okay as well. Because this last slide, I think, is one of the most important. These are the two individuals that work tirelessly behind the scenes, Faye and Nareda, and Mr. Coleman as well. But, you know, at this event, you probably wouldn't have seen them standing out. It was rare that we got them to pose for a photo because they were there making sure that everything was running the way we had planned. And it's their tireless commitment and devotion to this work that has seen this program, we've seen this program grow, and we're seeing tremendous impact. So I want to just take a moment and thank you for all the work you do.
this was our sixth annual, and Faye Silva was the original inspiration. She's the person who started the Latino Role Models, which now has over 350 people attending, and we hope it grows and grows every year. So thank you, Faye, and thank you, everybody.
Questions from the board?
He's got his mic.
And comments are from the public.
He's got a light.
He's got a light.
I'd like to extend my thanks to Facebook too. I've been attending these for many years, and I remember when we had, they were so small that we had to go there for a little theater. And every year it is more and more, it gets bigger and bigger and more edifying, and it is a real eye-opener for a great many of our students. So well, I think we all need to give a big round of applause to Faye Silva.
Okay, we're moving on to a step.
Oh, I was slow.
Sheila.
Well, I also just want to thank the parents and the students who came out here tonight to tell us about this, because it sounds wonderful, and next year I'm going to go. And thank you very much. And thank you also, Faye.
Okay. Where am I? Staff report, technology integration.
It is a good night for Ed Services. We're going to share with you another happy report about the work that we're doing through the support of teacher leadership, both in the classroom and out of the classroom. So, as Jeremy pointed out earlier, we have some wonderful coaches under the direction of our amazing curriculum and assessment director, Jennifer Wildman. So I'm going to turn it over to her to introduce this next report.
Good evening, everybody. I was also very interested in the comment that was made that teaching is an exhausting profession, because that is absolutely true. And there's a lot of research out there about how coaching supports this kind of exhaustion and makes things a lot better for teachers. The most recent and most thorough survey was in 2004 and concluded that effective coaching encourages collaboration and reflective practice for teachers. Which in itself is a really important thing. But it also promotes a positive cultural change. It promotes teachers' use of data. There was a lot of good effects, and it's really been a pleasure to have coaches on board to support our teachers this year. One of those coaches is Gino Rogi, and he's supporting technology in the district. Gino's already worked with hundreds of our teachers in supporting classroom technology, both in Illuminate, which is our new student data system, but also Google applications and many, many other things that teachers request support with in the area of technology. And as one of our student reps mentioned, there's a lot of things that can go wrong with technology. By the way, I think that's been fixed, that YouTube block. It was an external error, and that I think has been fixed with our content filter. But there, because of that, it's kind of an unpredictable thing to start to use in your classroom if you're not expecting something to go wrong when it goes wrong. So one of Gino's roles is to provide examples and models, and also to be there to support a teacher who's using something new, maybe for the first time. So Gino will also introduce teacher David Norman from Brain Supporting Middle School, who was one of the teachers that was supported in using some technology this year, and I'm going to leave this report up to them. Thanks.
Thank you. Gino Arugi, a tech coach. First of all, I want to thank you all for this time, this opportunity for us to share our work, and also for your continued and ongoing support technology here at Santa Cruz City Schools. I'm going to start with a global systemic kind of overview, narrow it down, finally end up with student work, right down to the classroom, looking through the standards. So, get started. Illuminate. So a countywide Illuminate data and assessments. We're at a very exciting time in Santa Cruz the history of Santa Cruz City Schools, the history of our county, where we're all using Illuminate, data and assessment. And so, data, little history. Summer of 2015, IT, Curtis Gomez and team, uploaded data from Infinite Campus into Illuminate. That's student demographics, teachers, courses, rosters, state assessment data, including the CELT for ELLs, English language learners, SBAP, Common Core. And I came in right about the end of July to work on that. This fall, started moving the benchmarks from DataWise into Illuminate Education. Those being the reading tests, math tests, as well as SRI, Scholastic Reading Inventory, SMI, Scholastic Math Inventory. Also school-wide writing, K-8, and recently, the middle school math assessments, which are common assessments. As far as training goes, we're in the data and assessment module only. This translates into training and creating assessments, and then creating the reports that go along with those assessments. Preliminary focus has been on early adopters, the power users, who were the people who really used DataWise a lot, and recreation of those formative and benchmark assessments into Illuminate. I've been focusing my attention mostly on our RTI coordinators, PLCs, curriculum and tech coaches for reporting and custom reports, as well as creating these assessments as well. The future. We're moving into English language learner monitoring for progress towards reclassification for the first time. This will be held digitally. Common math placement for students entering Santa Cruz City Schools from outside the district, from Live Oak and SoCal. And that's another plus for having the same data and assessment countywide. Custom reporting for individual, whoever needs it, essentially anyone that needs specific reports. And as well as Illuminate Implementation Committee, which just convened, we're going to meet monthly to create the rollout plan for the next 2 years, as well as site-based teams. So, here's where the rubber meets the road. So, classroom technology integration. Up here we see that the Common Core state standards for technology, they're embedded in the Common Core standards. So they're no longer a separate thing. This one we're looking at right here is speaking and listening, number 5, strategic use of media to enhance understanding. They're aligned with the International Society for Technology Education standards, and it's number 2 for them, communicate ideas effectively. And I want to just preface this. This is a project-based, a project called the Invention Revolution, from the 8th graders at Grants Authority. They had to write a report, more or less 500-word report, on some invention of their choice. Create a public service, the task was to create a public service announcement which highlights the main points. Parameters being, it couldn't be longer than 90 seconds. So it's pretty incredible. When you watch this, I want you to pay attention to these advanced techniques that they're using, such as time-lapse photography, green screen technology, overdubbing, embedding music, etc. Oh, there's no speakers. They're talking.
Sorry.
I don't hear anything.
Is the volume?
Gina, weren't you supposed to bring speakers?
Human error.
I knew I forgot. Well, you'll still see what the technology they're using in Infinite Campus. Because they use time-lapse photography. Here you go.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Sorry.
So these are the facts that they have to come up with, that they have to highlight. talking about how much money it's worth. This is green screen technology right here. It's actually sitting in front of a big green curtain. And in the background there's music playing. Sorry about that. Yeah, I can sing the song. Da, da. Okay, well, you get the picture. At this point, I'd like to continue by introducing David Norman. He's a new teacher at Rand Sporting and also one of our newest member of tech coaches, a mover and shaker.
Nice. Thank you, Gina. As Gina mentioned, I'm a new teacher at Rand Sporting Middle School. I teach sixth grade core. And so with the Common Core standards, I also have a particular focus towards the integration of technology in the classroom and fostering tech literacy for 21st century learners. So with the Common Core standards, as we moved into a unit on explanatory text, informational text, I wanted to engage my students in creating informational text as the Common Core asks for. And specifically, I wanted to figure out where they were at while also building some technology skills and engaging them in something they found interesting and let them explore that for the purpose of figuring out where they're at and getting them excited about writing informational text, explanatory text. So I had them design websites. The task was to design a website about something that they think is amazing and that they think everyone else should learn more about. So, as you can imagine, with something so broad, I got a ton of different topics. For instance, pigs. There are many types of pigs. So, the text is a little bit small over here, but this student, he has types of pigs, interesting pig facts, some videos on pigs, why you should like pigs. He's already getting into argumentative text a little bit. Swimming. All about swimming, different kinds of strokes, ways to swim, swim meets, different swim competitions, etc., etc. Lots of detailed information. They were supposed to use interesting backgrounds, supply images, even embed videos into their websites. Here's one on basketball. Lots of detailed information on basketball, the rules, different positions, all kinds of things about the topic. And they got very detailed, had many different pages, and this was a great way to get them excited to explore informational text. Thank you.
That is our presentation. Do you have any questions?
Can I just, go ahead, Jeremy.
I should just say very quickly how much I appreciate the evolution of this project over time and the commitment that the staff has to promoting inquiry, but also to promoting the types of research that not only engage students, but they get them ready for the research they'll be doing in subsequent years.
Jeremy?
Yeah, I have a question for David. Thank you for the presentation. So let's say you hadn't used technology. I'm assuming you've got a class of 30.
Right.
Do you think, I'm always interested in how technology can help foster critical thinking. And sometimes I'm doubtful, but this really looks good. What was the buy-in like? On a project like this where they got to do this exciting technology versus if you had simply said, write me a little essay on basketball or on pigs or on swimming. I think those are the three examples.
Well, I can't give a database answer.
We didn't have a control group.
I don't have my control group. But engagement was incredibly high across the board. They, since videos were required, they were actually required to browse YouTube for a short period of time in my class, which got them very excited. Not only that, but doing it via technology also satisfies one of those embedded tech standards within the Common Core, which is to use a variety of technology to publish their writing and to use it to work collaboratively and give feedback to one another, which they would not have been able to do without this. One of the great things also about Google Sites is users can make comments. And so I had them make comments on each other's websites, suggestions for improvement, something they thought was amazing, something they thought could be even better, and then their task was to read those comments and address them.
One follow-up question, if you'd allow me. Do you notice then that when you give them an assignment that doesn't involve technology, there's a letdown in terms of what they do, or do they take that excitement and just carry over? You ask them to write, you know, you read a passage from a book the next week and they write a half page on what they read or something like that.
You know, I think it also depends. It depends on what you move into next. And I think one of the most exciting things about technology and the way that it gets used in the classrooms, at least at B40s, it's used as a really collaborative tool where students get to work with one another. And as long as students are able to have that collaborative experience, even if they're collaborating on what we call like a four-square organizer on paper, at least as long as they get to have that discussion, there's still a strong level of engagement and they can interact with each other. Certainly, some students definitely have that tech angle, that tech focus, and maybe are not as excited to work on paper. That's certainly true. But I think one of the most engaging aspects for students across the board is how it allows them to have conversations with really everyone in the classroom all at once in a way where they can all be heard.
Thank you.
Dee Dee.
I have one quick question. As students increasingly use the internet as a source of inquiry, I'm wondering how you couple the tech skills that they're learning, which I think are very important, with information literacy so that they're not only citing their sources, but they're being very critically analytic about the accuracy and legitimacy of the sources that they're using into their publishing material.
Right, and that is a really, really important thing to teach students is, if you're looking for information, where are you getting that information from? What kind of site is this coming from? Is it reputable? And we're working on really integrating that as well into our research projects at our site, especially right now. Seventh grade science has a whole project specifically devoted to assessing reliability of sources.
Sheila.
I work with adolescents, middle school adolescents in my private work all the time. And so I'm interested in two things. One is they both have to do with kind of the trouble they have with socialization and with speaking up. In fact, I just had somebody today telling me about how terrifying it was for her to speak up. It's a very, very bright girl, speak up in class. So I'm curious about whether having the technological tool there, working with it, allows them to feel freer, like they can talk around the tool instead of, because they'll talk about the group things and say, yeah, well, you know, I don't have anything to say, and other people say all the things, and, you know, that it might counter that. And I'm also curious from the other side whether you would find it interesting to have some of that commentary on the websites be something sort of like writer's workshop, where the students actually sit around and talk about each other's work and not just write it down for the students to see. So that's my two questions.
Great. So first, I have definitely noticed with some of my more quiet, reserved students that they are really able to shine in conversation, whether it's on Google Classroom or in these comments here, and really express what they're thinking and comment on the thinking of others and really help fuel the understanding of the entire classroom. As far as it, your second question.
The writer's workshop kind of idea, bringing in the socialization kind of.
So I would never use conversation on, say, Google Classroom or in comments on websites to be a complete stand-in for verbal conversation, because I think that's so important to get that as well. But I feel like being able to have your comment in Google Classroom with your name attached to it and other students being able to see and remark on your well-thought-out comments and give you that, that sense of validation then can help support a more timid student to be able to speak up because they've already been validated by their peers.
Thank you.
Jeremy?
There's also an aspect of, you saw, well, you would have heard if I was not speakers. These two boys that I showed you are very shy and timid. When they're recording, they're in a sound booth, just talking into the computer. So they come out loud and clear, and it's really remarkable.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Jeremy?
So two quick questions. One, David, this is an example of narrative writing, and explanatory. I apologize. What might you be thinking about doing next? And Gino, how many teachers are you working with, or how many teachers are you watching, like David, using technology in this sort of sophisticated way with their classes? Thanks.
Sure. So coming up on the horizon for us, at least as a sixth grade core team, is argumentative. So we also, in social studies, are working towards a global issues unit where the students get to take an issue of global importance and really delve into it, and the main goal is to get everyone to understand why it's so important, to buy into the importance of this issue, that people should pay attention, to recommend possible solutions or next steps to alleviate whatever this issue is. And so when we go to do that, we're still formulating this whole unit. It's new this year. But my idea is that we start getting into some of this video production and make presentations via either Google Slides or Prezi or something like that that can then embed their video. And then all of that will serve as support for an oral presentation.
And then to your question. Because I wear so many hats, a lot of my work is, I might be working with one PLC on video techniques or project-based learning. The other PLC, I might be working with RTI coordinators and setting up assessments or reports and things like that. So I'm kind of moving all over the place on different levels.
Got it.
Yeah, so mostly my work, when you put all the teachers together, there's hundreds that I'm working with. But for this type of project, it would be a small group, maybe 20 teachers.
20.
Also, the digital divide, I'm addressing that as well. So.
And we keep records of all that, the teachers that we work with. So we have numbers and names and sites, and it's a matter of keeping data on what Gina has been working on and all of our coaches.
Ella.
I just wanted to know what materials were available to the students for these projects. This looks really cool, and I know in my sociology and psychology class right now, we're filming public service announcements to talk about architects, and we're working with a Chromebook cart and two classroom cameras. So is there materials that you had that would be more effective in the classroom, or that you're seeing like a particular tool that is really enhancing student projects?
That's a fantastic question. We, for these projects, students used Chromebooks. Although one of the issues that impacted this project, that is a fairly serious issue, is just the availability of Chrome carts at our site. We've got at Francis 40 more than other schools, but we availability is still not 100%. We don't have one-to-one. So availability of technology, increased technology in schools, would be wonderful. As far as creating things like videos, they use, I believe, primarily iPads for the videos for the Invention Revolution. But we are also in the process right now of fundraising for camcorders, because those iPads also get used by other classes and for projects that aren't just video recording. But for projects like this, all we really need is a camcorder. And in fact, they're also higher quality and a better high quality sound for much less of a cost.
It's also a very contagious process. We started with flip cameras maybe 10 years ago, these little things
that look like cameras. Yeah.
And just by showing colleagues, putting them out there, people are like, oh, I want to do that. I could do that. And I just shared them out. And pretty soon, we started going into iPads and, you know, that type of thing. So definitely you can do it with, well, a lot of my kids are using their iPhones.
Yeah, my project is on my phone right now.
Right.
So hopefully I don't
right.
drop it.
And then you can skip the whole process by just uploading it to YouTube.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there comments from the public?
Hi there, my name is Nick Morris. I just wanted to applaud the program, applaud the teachers, and then also applaud the district for attracting innovative teachers.
Lots of applause. We
like
that.
Applause.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have a staff report, the local control accountability plan survey results.
While we pull this up, I'll just take a moment to kind of situate us in regards to the LCAP, the Local Control Accountability Plan. We are at a place in the planning process where I'm going to be bringing you some of the feedback that we get from staff and parents, and then next month I'll be sharing with you feedback from students. And the community engagement is a really important part of the plan. So I always start with going back to my experience with a school plan as a site administrator. A district plan is very similar to that school plan in that it's not just on paper. It really does represent your vision, your philosophy, and then the very concrete ways that you're going to support your vision through funding for programs, for resources, for positions. So So the local control accountability plan does all of those things.
Can I just make a suggestion?
Yeah.
We're having a technology column.
Sure. We don't have a PowerPoint for Angela's presentation on. Can we reorder the agenda, let Jim present while I make sure we get the item up in order? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Do we have to move for approval for that, or do we just do it?
No,
we can just do it.
We're rogue. We're running rogue tonight.
Really.
Are we going to transportation or to gym?
We're going to 8.3.4, which is transportation bus fleet purchase. Oh, or we're going.
We can do that.
Okay.
My stuff is just not.
That's why it's not on.
Is it? I guess it didn't download all the way.
I had to take it from WordPad. It'll be in Adobe format.
But I started downloading it way back. For some reason, it was just fine.
That's the best I can do because no one gave it to me.
I have it on my computer if you want to come. plug my computer.
Well, I have the Adobe document from BoardPad. That's what I'm saying. I can give you that, mm-hmm. but no one sent me the PowerPoint.
I like my paper.
I know. That's my paper.
My paper.
Are we moving on to Jim?
Paper,
yes.
Paper.
Okay, so Jim.
Oh, I got paper in the car.
So we're going to focus to 8.3.4 to the transportation bus fleet purchase.
Thank you, President Thompson. Bringing forward tonight is a follow-up from our presentation we made within the transportation department a couple of meetings ago when we talked about the needs we have within the department and meeting just our basic minimum transportation. So bringing forward tonight for an action item is our staff requesting to purchase two additional special need buses with wheelchair lifts in order to meet just our basic minimum needs to create a fleet that will have enough to do the daily transportation and to put a couple into substitute circulation. We continue to have vehicles that are breaking down just because of the age that we discussed previously. In this particular case, I've already had discussions with the County Office of Ed. We're making a transfer out of the Deferred Maintenance Fund that the Board so approves tonight to purchase these two additional buses, which will definitely enhance the transportation experience for our district. So staff recommends approval.
Do we have questions from the Board?
Just one, Jim. These are the buses that Trevor brought forward speaking about on the January 10th meeting?
Correct.
Okay. Move to approve.
Comments from the public? Any other questions, comments from the Board? And we have a motion. Patty, will you?
Yes, move to approve.
Excellent.
Purchase.
Second.
So Patty and Dee Dee. All in favor? Student recommendation?
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? 7-0.
Thank you very much.
Are we ready for LCAP?
Oh, we're going to do budget.
Okay, we're going to go to 8.3.5, staff report, governor's January budget proposal. Jim.
Okay, thank you again, President Thompson. Bringing tonight is somewhat of a repeat, but we first shared this with our budget advisory committee about Santa Cruz City Schools. In mid-February, staff along, we invited the bargainers to attend with us in Sacramento to first look at the 16-17 budget on behalf of Governor Brown. And we're bringing you the highlights of that at the current time. Again, this is the first look. It will now go through the process of debate and politicking in Sacramento, making their adjustments. And the next significant piece in this will be the governor's May revise, which will come right around the middle of May, which we'll then attend also on behalf of staff and inviting our partners to go along with us. And then hopefully within that time frame, we'll begin to make true necessary changes within the next 30 days to bring forward back to the board in conjunction with the local control accountability plan, the first reading of the 16-17 budget, and ultimately the adoption by the board with all the input that will go forward over the next 3 to 4 months. So what are some of the highlights and the themes for the 16-17 governor budget? The governor continues to stabilize the funding of programs really within the state. Of course, we received the lion's share over the past couple of years, so we're beginning to see the decrease towards the education side of the house. He's continued the repayment of the maintenance factor, which again is that repayment of that deficit that we encountered. We took the biggest brunt during the economic crisis, during that 5 to 6 year of the Great Recession. He's continued to make those pieces. Now, of course, the growth is strong. We're still projecting for 16-17. But of course, Governor Brown, again, still wants to highlight the risk of recession. In other words, making sure we're prepared for any potential downswing, which we'll note just some key areas as we move forward. A key component of this, which I know we'll get back to with the Assistant Superintendent's presentation, is the Local Control Accountability Plan. But these documents really work hand-in-hand as the key drivers for the overall continued success of the district. So what are some of the concerns that we're hearing from the governor and from some of the legislators is the fact that preparing for the slowdown is due to a couple things. We heard earlier from Casey Carlson regarding the Proposition 30 temporary taxes, meaning they're currently set to sunset. There was a sales tax as well as an income tax. We're looking at extending the income side of it versus the sales tax portion of it. The growth in the economy. We've had successive years of growth. in California, we ride that train up and down the peaks and the valleys. And of course, the repayment of the maintenance factor. What's critical about that is we'll show in a couple of slides the rapid growth that was used to pay this down and where we really sit to get back to those 07, 08 purchasing levels. A key component that we'll be seeing affecting us in 2016-17 is the cost of living adjustment. Right now, it's projected to be 0.47, less than 0.5%, where it was earlier projected to be annually in the 2 to 3% range. And we'll go over in a couple of slides forward of what's really affecting that the most. So what is the governor's budget saying? He still proposes to have Prop 98 funding of $71.6 billion. And on the slide coming forward, we'll show how that growth really curtailed during the Great Recession and where we're at now based upon the current economic growth. A key component of this is there are certain factors that go into place. And once these factors hit, it necessitates district to really follow the fact of capping off their reserve levels. And we've discussed at BAC and also in the past of what that does sometimes for us as a district when you minimize the amount of cash we may have on hand. Because one of our districts is a basic aid, so it receives their income 2 months out of the year versus our secondary district, which receives it just about monthly. And trying to meet those monthly commitments become a challenge if there isn't sufficient cash to meet the monthly demands. But the key component, if all those tests were met, we'd be capped off at about a 6% reserve as a district. Currently, it's projected about a 16 to 17% reserve is needed to ride out these ebbs in cash flow. Some districts are higher. We are not there. We're definitely right around the range of, we can average about 9 to 10%. However, with the current governor's budget, he creates a new maintenance factor owed to schools in 16-17. He pays off the previous years, but creates a new one for 16-17. A key component is support for schools. It drops to about 2% versus the 8.4% we received in previous years. Other programs throughout the state are seeing a lion's share of the dollars going into next year. This is what I referred to just a couple of slides ago. During the height or the opposite, the lows of the Great Recession, the state received about $47.3 billion as part of the funding for schools, which is significantly different from the $71.6 which is projected for next year. And again, the governor made a commitment to restore or repay schools which suffered the brunt during the economic crisis. So what are some of the major proposals? Again, the governor includes $2.8 billion for the local control funding formula, which is this new calculation factor that's used by schools up and down the state. Again, the governor does not want to increase the credit card debt for the state. So with excess dollars, he's looking at discretionary one-time allocations. That is just his goal. That's part of, I guess you could say, Governor Brown's legacy, by not increasing that piece as we grow to incredible lengths during peak times and then have no ability to adjust when the recession hits. So he's continuing to use the one-time allocation as a key resource for these dollars. The other ones are significantly smaller. The two really make up the gap as the 2.8 in local control, 1.2 for discretionary. You see 1.6 for early education block grant, but that's not new dollars. He's actually combining current funding to a different allocation. Continual shell game that the state sometimes plays with the same amount of dollars. Again, we talked about the cap on district reserves. All the conditions are not being met as far as that maintenance factor. So right now, that double the recommended reserve, which for a district of our size would be 6%, the recommended reserve being 3, are not in effect. But we became very, very close within this past year. But because the governor creates a new factor or a new debt to schools in some ways by not fully funding it for the next year, it doesn't kick that in. So what are some of the highlights of the local control funding formula? As we talked about, the governor really made a tremendous effort to minimize this gap to get us back to the low purchasing power. Based upon the gap, he's expected to close it by another 49% this year. Okay. That will mean that 85% of the gap was closed within the last 4 years of this new funding formula. The challenge, though, it gets us to about 95% of the targeted funding levels. So So you can see now that gap that was really huge 4 years ago has shrunk to a very minimal amount. So you'll see the dollars that will be coming in the future are going to be much, much less. Even though the growth may be there, the commitment was to get us back to this particular level. The other challenge is basically going to be because of the increase in responsibility to us in retirement programming, meaning PERS, FERS, et cetera, it's now pretty much consensus that we will never reach that full 100% targeted funding level because it's growing at a much faster pace than what the governor will be able to allocate any dollars to. The key component, again, we talked about was that 0.5% of cost of living adjustment. And the significant piece is we see a much lower percentage here based upon our makeup of students, meaning a lower free and reduced lunch population, a lower English language learner population. The average across the state is about 5.6%, or about $489 per average daily attendance. That's the average. That means you're going to have some districts that are going to be 10 or 12%, i.e. some of our neighbors, you know, 20 miles south, versus a district like us, which will probably be about 2% next year of growth, 2 to 3% because of the makeup of our students. It's just that continued difference in the funding formulas based upon the makeup of the student population. So again, one-time funds is a key component. Right now, the governor's projecting about $214 per ADA. I've directed staff to currently project $200 versus our projected ADA. And the reason why we're a little more conservative was last year at this time, we were told budget about $609 per ADA. When the budget was revised in May, it dropped all the way down to $514. So in the blink of an eye, we lost about $600,000. So instead of coming across this whole amount right now, we're dropping that projection to about $200 from $214, and we've projected our ADA for next year to be about a little over $6,400. And again, the governor wants us to use these one-time funds in a myriad of ways of trying to really pay off two burdens or two debts to the school districts by using one-time funds. So again, this just tells you what are the new target factors for the districts up and down the state. Again, it's broken into grade spans, K through 3, 4 through 6, 7, 8, 9, 12, based upon that piece. And this is the funding level that is pertaining to be and with the additional cost of living adjustment per student for the next year. This also takes into consideration that for K through 3, there's an additional grade span adjustment for those, which we do here by meeting our smaller classroom ratio than other districts. We receive an additional $704 grade span adjustment per the level of K through 3. And we receive a smaller amount for some of our smaller classes within ninth grade secondary courses. Here's a key component that was the debt that was given to school districts from the governor. And this is the CalSTRS retirement rate. You'll see where we are in 2015-16. We're projected to pay 10.73 per employee on STRS, where in 2020-21, it's expected to climb to 19.10%. It's increased in about 1.85% annually. And that's written in to expect. Now, as you saw, our cost of living adjustment is 0.47. But our STRS is growing by a rate of 1.85 based upon those employees. On the CalPERS side, that's slated to increase about 1.203%. And you see where that's slated to grow in the next 5 to 6 years up to 20.4%, which has been mandated to us by the state. So what does it really mean for us on our current calculations? And again, this is just our first look based upon the current information that I will loudly express will change. It will change, it will change. It changes by who I gave this first report to the Budget Advisory Committee. But what we're projecting right now is, again, on the elementary side, we project the attendance, but they're a basic aid district. So right now we're projecting our new base to be about 21.8. With LCFF supplemental dollars of $1.5 million. It's an increase of about $306,000 to the supplemental side. Supplemental services towards those specific students in need of these services. The difference is about $82,000 that can be added to the general unrestricted pot for the elementary side. So about $382,000, $390,000 in growth, only $82,000 really is unrestricted. The rest goes to supplemental services. On the secondary side, you see where we're projected to be based upon attendance. Our new base, a little over 36 million. LCFF supplemental increases to 2.2, which is an increase of over $500,000, which allows a base increase of $900,000 based upon where we're at. So for our district, we're looking right now at early projections of combined increase of $990,000 to base, unrestricted dollars you could use for any expenses, $800,000 to supplemental services. That to be spent on those types of services affecting those particular students versus the total general welfare of the students. So in the red, which by a little bit is not too dark to see, what does that mean for us? We're saying about $990,000 that we could spend on any type of increase for 16-17 currently. We're projecting our step and column to increase for certificated about $484,000 in change, and step and column for classified to increase just under $200,000. We're projecting STIRS to increase about $608,000, and PERS to increase $122,000. So our projected right now increase is about $1.4 million, with an increase in base of about $900,000. So when we talk about a built-in deficit, that's where our built-in deficit occurs for us here. So how do we cover that? We cover that with reserves, the savings account. Because we're basically pulling in more potential unrestricted expenses than we receive in unrestricted dollars. Again, this is just the first look that we'll see. So what are the next steps? At the state level, as you mentioned, there'll be budget committee hearings. May revision will give us more data, which will really tighten up some of these projections that are given to us by Governor Brown at this point in time. We'll continue to create the budget based upon our current assumptions, i.e. the growth in step and column, the growth in STIRS. We're utilizing our current projections that were brought to you a little over a month ago to set up class sizes and the master schedules to take into effect all those reductions that can be done. The second interim is due by March 16th, which is our next reporting period, which takes us up to January 31 of this fiscal year. So we're working on that as a staff currently. And then I also wanted to include, this is just a real early picture of our current multi-year projection. This multi-year projection does not include the unsettled negotiations, any increased expenditure for supplemental programs in the next year or year after that, or the effects of second interim or any legislative negotiation with the governor. Basically, there's a lot of caveats that will still affect the particular MYP at this point in time. And our goal is to bring that information to you as it changes.
Jeremy.
I don't want to be alarmist, but I mean, the math is a little bit disconcerting. What you're saying is that over the next 5 years, there's going to be a 2.5 million ongoing increase for certificated STRS and a approximately, if I've got my math right, 800,000 plus increase for CalPERS. So that's 3.3 million total ongoing dollars by the end of the road in 2020. That's got to be something that is being talked about at the state level, because we're not the only district negatively impacted by that. Is there any hope, or are you hearing any rumblings that this is just a situation that's got to be alleviated? Because the implications are profound, aren't they? Major hit on our budget. That's
the unfunded liability portion, which is the retirements, really affects public entities throughout the state. That's counties, that's state level positions, school districts. The state is not taking, I guess we could say, that responsibility on. They're leaving it to the employers. So in this case, they're passing it down, in our case, to school districts. What we're hearing is there are some districts, which definitely are in the minority, I've never shown it, that are in this position. Because the majority of districts have a higher free and reduced lunch participation rate. They have a higher English language learner rate, a percentage rate. So they're receiving these significant add-on concentrated dollars. We are definitely in the minority in this piece, and that's where we've begun the discussion with local leaders. We're looking, continuing to look at other districts that have created, in some ways, an agency of this pool of districts in the same position to advocate with the politicians, to bring it to their awareness level that not everybody's winning, and we are definitely not winning in this current calculation. We're not hearing the PERS and STERS responsibility going away from districts. We're not hearing that at all. So it's going to take just continued advocacy on our part, along with the districts in our position, to make sure it's very clear that this expectation is going to have, could have damaging effects to our district.
Sheila?
I just wanted to get one thing clear. It sounded like you were saying earlier on that you're making conservative assumptions in terms of the amount of money we're bringing in. And I wanted to check and see if that's what you were saying. And also, I think I have this problem all the time. I can't figure out where property taxes fits in here. Is the property taxes already accounted for in the revenue up there?
Yes. Property taxes is the main funding source for our elementary school district.
But at the increase?
Yeah, we project it to be at 2% per year. Okay, that's our current projection.
Is that what it has been lately?
It rotates. Last year, it approximately was about 3.9% as far as an increase. When we discussed this and put the assumptions forward, we have discussions with the County Office of Ed. The challenge is we will not know the actual percentage growth until probably November of next year after we close the fiscal year. So we go through, we'll get updates, we'll get projections, and we'll continue to project. And we'll have probably, as we get close to the May revise and we begin to really tighten down that budget, we'll have continued conversation with the County Office of Ed. We'll have conversations with the County Tax Collector to see what rate they're coming in at. And so, we'll make those appropriate adjustments to be a little bit tighter as far as that.
I was wondering why we wouldn't make it for what, because it's going up, not down.
Because we haven't received it yet.
What?
And we will not know the actual amount until after the fiscal year is closed.
I understand that, but I'm wondering why we're not assuming it's going to be about what it is now.
Because there's been time, I know, when it's been assumed in the past, and it's come in less. And we base expenses on those particular assumptions, and you put contracts into place, so we have to continue to be conservative in that piece.
And is that true across the board? Because you said that about several other things that we thought it might be this, but we're going to budget for this. Are we being conservative across the board with our...
Well, we're already going to be conservative projecting, I think, one, our income and our expenses in some way. Mm-hmm. Right now, I think last year was, we used last year as the barometer for the one-time monies. You know, it dropped $90 per ADA. If it dropped $90 per ADA, we lose over half of our dollars we're going to receive next year. I don't want to project it to be that conservative, but it could happen. You know, depending upon what other needs come from the state. For example, one of the key factors right now, believe it or not, we're experiencing the wealth of having low gas prices, right? Less than $2 a gallon in certain places. The companies in the Middle East still make money when it's $40 a barrel. Texas can't. Oklahoma can't. So these low gas prices are helping us here, which is one of the factors that's led to the lower cost of living adjustment factor for next year. Because that growth, as you'll see, is also beginning to have an effect on the stock market, have an effect on the rest of the economic growth. That's why we have to remain somewhat conservative in all those pieces. Right now, we had, for example, on our health and welfare benefits, we followed up 2-3 weeks ago to what's our percentage we should project. We project about 8% increase on an annual basis. And that's what we were told still from our vendor to continue to project. As we tighten up in April, May, if that reduces, absolutely we get the new rates, we'll then adjust those down. As far as our percentage growth.
Okay. Jeremy.
Jim, just to be perfectly clear, if you could call up magically slide 13. There you go. So if, in fact, we didn't have a STERS increase of 1.85% resulting in $600,000 and a PERS increase of 1.2% resulting in $122,000, we'd be in pretty darn good shape. We'd be in positive by hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars.
or if we didn't have to pay back $1.5 million a year in fair share reduction from our Taxville Elementary site. We'd be in a much better shape. That'd go a long way to funding many programs in our district. But I'd be foolish and probably unemployed in about 6 months if I were to bring those projections to them. I mean, I'm not trying to be coy with it, but those are what we know for sure right now. And all I see on the PERS and STIRS side are these mandated increases that they've projected across the board. And we know the fair share reduction is ongoing. There is no end in sight for that for my elementary district side. That was written into the local control funding formula.
Are there questions from the public? Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
A little bit of good news.
Patty, I'm sorry, I didn't see that.
No worries. It's kind of hard on the circle there. Jim, just help me out. When we do the reporting here and we put the baseline revenue, do you always include, because this is always a first step in it, and I know that this is, you know, this is a just a point in time, but the question comes from the community when they see the revenue side. On that, is the fair share reduction included, or do you show the revenue and then the fair share out? Do you line item that?
Oh, that'd be the net amount. That'd be our net.
Okay, so that is our net, including so that would include the parcel taxes.
Yes.
So moving forward, because our language in our parcel tax is that it shall be kept separate, can we have in the reporting always the line separate for that in the revenues?
As far as the parcel taxes?
As whenever we're reporting out.
We can break out the dollar amount that we're projecting, absolutely.
Thank you. It's always because there is much confusion both ways, and then people see revenue assuming that it's all state revenue and not any special, what I guess some would consider special revenue because it's local. And because the language in our, when we went for the parcel tax says that it will be held in a separate account, it would be good to just show that revenue separately.
It's considered unrestricted revenue for the district.
Yeah, we want to be careful about that because when we go to the people, I know what you're saying
in the accounting purposes,
but it does to the layperson who is not the accountant and who we continue to ask for money. It's always important to help us understand that it is important to them to know where that line item lies. That's all.
Absolutely.
So again, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Jeremy, do you have another question?
I do. You're projecting, and this budget contains a projection of an 8% increase for health care. If that comes in wonderfully at 2%, which is what we received this last year, what would be the difference approximately without holding you to the number?
I have to go back and look at that actual calculation.
Are we looking at hundreds and hundreds of thousands?
They pulled it off. I have to go back to the benefit line and pull, you know, percentage off. I can get that to you, and I'll send a sprint to Monroe for the.
I'd appreciate that because.
Absolutely. We do. And as soon as we bring it out, we'll make that effect on the budget as we get closer to May and show where it falls out. Absolutely. I just want to say the one bit of good news that I have is my wife and I became grandparents for the first time.
Yay!
I probably got it a couple of days. So.
So, thank you, Jim. Mazel tov.
Madam President, I would like to clarify for the minutes, because we came to some agreements at the governance session, was the request from Ms. Threet and the request from Mr. Shonick for the record, or those items that we're going to follow up on?
Yes,
so
thank
please remember
you
to use that language per
yes,
our agreements.
My request
sure
is for the record,
up.
If in fact we pencil in a 2% health care cost increase instead of an 8%, what would be the savings?
Thank you.
Thank you for asking.
Okay, thank you.
And mine can just be general at this point, that will allow for Mr. Monreal to have a moment with me and speak to it, and we can see what the end goal is for that.
Sure.
Thank you.
For the clarification.
Thank you.
Okay, time for 8.3.3, Local Control Accountability Plan Survey Results.
I apologize that this wasn't loaded. I'm so grateful that we were able to bring it up. Otherwise, I could just make up the results. So, again, just to quickly recap, what we're going to be looking at tonight is the first report of some community engagement, and then I'll be coming back next month with a report of engagement with our students. So our local control accountability plan is like a school plan, but bigger. It really reflects not only our vision and mission, but it breaks it down into those eight priority areas. And the eight priority areas are important because that is how we designed the survey. So the first area encompasses the foundations for learning, making sure that we have fully credentialed teachers, that they're trained in the standards, that we have facilities with fewer holes in the ceiling, that we're working on replacing those facilities with holes. So just those foundational pieces. The second key area for the LCAP is the student outcomes. And how we really look at this as a match with our goals and metrics is that we're not only interested in supporting all students to access college and career, but we're interested in and we're invested in closing the gap. And so we measure our performance not only just as an aggregate, just looking at the total, we look closely at our student subgroups, and we set goals around acceleration for those student subgroups so that they're not continuing to lag behind their peers due to programmatic elements. We see that as our responsibility. And then the last area is the engagement, and it's engagement like we saw tonight with our parents and students. It's finding ways within our schools and our community to not only bring folks in, but provide ways for their voices to be heard. And so whether that's students, whether it's staff, whether it's their parents or community, those are key components of our LCAP. So tonight we're going to take a look at the survey that was designed to capture both parent and staff input on those areas. So we sent out the surveys via Infinite Campus to our parents, and then we also provided time in staff meetings for staff to take the survey. And we had double the response this year for parents. We went up to 706, and our staff response represents about, I want to say, 25% of our certificated staff. The design and focus, again, reflect the key priority areas of the LCAP. And so for the parents, we asked them to address what they saw as the strengths and needs of the school, the strengths and needs of their particular student, how they connected to the school, and how the school connects with them. And then with the staff, we asked them to be even more specific and give us examples of the ways in which they saw services supporting our English learners and our students living in poverty and our foster youth. And then we also, again, going back to that foundational supports within our plan, wanted to elicit from teachers what do they need to support their teaching, and what do they need to be able to support their students. Our participation was not even at all, and that's something that we need to address. We saw greater participation on the west side of town than on the east side. We did notice that when we had larger parent events, when we handed out the surveys, we got a great response. I think it's important to note that not all of our parents are comfortable with writing their response. And so at the DLAC meeting, we had some volunteers that interviewed parents using the questions on the form. And I think that, again, should be built into our plan moving forward, that we have opportunities for parents to respond verbally. We've since gathered additional surveys, and we're coding those right now and hoping to bring that back with the student surveys and at the end of March. We did have representation of parents and guardians whose children were in those subgroups. And when we looked at what the greatest needs were for per the parents, they thoughtfully brought in the support for teachers. I think parents see how hard our teachers work and see that teachers really need resources. They need opportunities to learn more about their curriculum. We need facilities. And then, of course, both during the school and outside of school support. And I just want to take a moment and acknowledge Nick Morris, who's sitting in the audience. But Nick has been helping us out at the district office. And he went through, these responses were presented in narrative form. Mm-hmm. And he took this on of reading thoughtfully each of the responses and coding them, which is why we have this level of detail. So the parents weighed in strongly about children and teacher development. And then interestingly, while many of the parents noted the need for support with academics, we also saw the social and emotional support. It came up with the parents and it comes up with the teachers. When they were asked to identify what were the supports, not only for their student, but for students they saw who were struggling, summer school and during the day programs were very popular, as was after school. You really kind of got people answering all three for this one. They were just saying, you know, everything is good, everything is important. When they were asked sympathy about their child, again, we see high ranking social emotional counseling. So the academic counseling, as well as the social emotional counseling. And then, as Trustee Schoenig noticed at the BAC, surprisingly, or hopefully not too surprisingly, a high number of parents identified advanced placement classes as something that their child would benefit from. And so we hope that this reflects the high expectations for parents and the great information that our schools are providing, that this is something that is available to all students. We also wanted to include an opportunity for parents to chime in about what they appreciate about their child's school, and it's not surprising that the thing they most appreciate are the people in the school. The teachers, the staff who greet them, the librarians, the counselors, closely followed by the community. And I think that's a really good match. The community is comprised not only of the staff, but it's also comprised of the parent groups on campus. So these were the two really high-ranking responses. When we go to the staff, we see a similar trend around the need for technology-supported curriculum. And again, I think this reflects how we've come through several years now, since 2008, of not really having dedicated professional development with resources. We've been doing the best we can, but without a lot of funding, we've been having to kind of pull things together. And definitely in terms of technology, we have some technology out there we know that we could use more. And then when we ask staff about what priority needs did they see for their students, the student services category captures the social emotional again. So within this category, staff talked about the importance of counseling, the importance of mental health support for students of all ages. We asked, or I shared one of the responses. We had recommendations for teachers to identify what would support our specific subgroups. And for all of the subgroups, they recommended counseling and additional intervention during the day. It was interesting to see that that was a little bit higher than the intervention outside of the day, and I think this reflects a trend that we saw with Walk to Read, of looking at how can we be creative with our master schedule so that we aren't stigmatizing students by having them stay after school to do this extra work or get this targeted support. We're able to provide it during the day. And we're able to have them stay after school to do great things like play at El Sistema. So the next steps, our district advisory and our leadership team will be reviewing the recommendations. Our district advisory committee, their homework the last time they met was to look at the data from the surveys, look at our current LCAP, see where there's overlap and see where there's gaps. And we're finding quite a few areas of overlap, and we're also finding areas where our community is saying we have more need and might be making a recommendation to address that need with all of the money that Jim has shared. But we will be making revisions to the plan in March and then bringing it back to you for your approval in June. The next set of data I'll be sharing with you will be the student data. So right now we have Joe Troutline is visiting classes and setting up focus groups, and I look forward to sharing what our students are interested in seeing in this plan.
Dee Dee.
I just want to point out that for the question, my child would benefit from, in addition to advanced placement, which you mentioned, the second highest response rate was for academic tutoring. And that is something that came up repeatedly in our DLAC meeting with parents, that they feel their students need help. And my question, not just to you, Angela, but to all of us, is how can we address this particular student need better?
And I think what we have in place right now is not meeting this need. So I want to, we do have an after-school program that is poorly subscribed. I think the students that are going to that program are not the students that we really need to have take advantage of that assistance. We were able to hire bilingual tutors in November, and working with the university, working with the work-study program, and working directly, so those tutors are in our math classes and our Algebra 1 classes at Harbor, Soquel, and Santa Cruz. And again, each time I bring this up, I'm going to be sharing what the challenge is. Placing university students in a classroom is one level of support. I think the level that we want to get to is providing them training and having a coordinator who is monitoring how they work with the students, because otherwise they are a great group of college-age students who can do what they can do. So I think we need to create more of a program for that so that it's those students have some training and know how they can interact. We have that model with our AVID program, so our AVID tutors are trained and they conduct tutorials, and that may be the next step that we take to have that provided during the day. I don't know if that answers your question. I think there's both needs. It's during the day and outside of the school day. We're struggling with how do we do that for high school students in a way that we can get the students there that we want there.
Well, high school and middle school.
And middle school, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sheila? So one thing is, I just want to remind you, when you have time in your next life, that I'd like to see the difference between elementary and secondary.
Absolutely.
For the record, when she has a life for more than 5 minutes, I would like to see it. And the other comment I had about, you know, you said it, the outside school interventions didn't look as good, and maybe that meant you had to do more inside. But I'm wondering if there's a way to ask it that would get at that a little bit more, because my suspicion is that it's the after school, outside school things are not as good. And I'm remembering Mary Gockel telling me, she totally mesmerized me, talking about what San Francisco State did and what some of the high schools in San Francisco did in terms of getting the students to feel as if that it was an identifiable group that they were part of. And that they stayed after school, and they were happy to stay after school, and it really worked. And I know, watching my daughter and her friends' experience, especially when we didn't have money, it was a whole lot of kids with very different needs shoved in that classroom with one teacher who was trying to keep them from bouncing off the walls. And a lot of those kids were disappointed in the experience, because they should have been disappointed in the experience. So, I'm suggesting maybe you should talk to Mary Gockel, because she had seen it in action, and she was quite exciting to listen to her talk about it. But also that maybe we should be asking kids, what is it that they would like, and what are they not getting? And their parents, too, probably know, because I knew.
I think it is really about how you frame it, and we haven't found a way to frame it or to provide an orientation to a program that would really draw in students. If you just say it's homework support, that's not very engaging. No.
Especially if they're not really getting it.
Exactly. Hello.
So, you know, thank you.
Just going off what was said earlier about tutoring, I've definitely noticed the UC students who are very dedicated and enthusiastic in, and they do come into classrooms and are in the library at certain times, but they're almost always sitting at empty tables, so I don't think it's a big connection and understanding. Mm-hmm. Amongst my peers, and there's a bit of a divide that's just not being adequately bridged, where you feel like you can approach these tutors, who I'm sure are valuable resources. And then I wanted to call attention to the idea of peer tutoring, because I know I'm thinking specifically of the math department, and that Santa Cruz High has a very effective but informal way of connecting younger students with students have already passed the classes that they need help in, and that just works out really well because students with the same open theory can meet up then, or at lunch, or certain breaks, and they can prepare for tests that the older student has already taken and like knows what to expect from that teacher and from that curriculum, and that's, I mean, from what I've heard, has been very helpful to students. And it's a lot more personalized. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, of course, we're high school seniors and juniors, we're not necessarily as qualified as more professional tutors, but...
Not necessarily.
It's a very good resource, I think, that could use a lot more exploring.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd love to find out more about that.
Mm-hmm. Are there questions from the public? Mm. Thank you, Angela. Okay, we're on 8.3.6. Resolution 25-15-16.
Is that Molly?
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
So the first resolution I bring for you, this is typically happens every year around this time, to approve the tie breaking criteria for our seniority list. This is for situations of layoffs, which we hope will not be happening. With people that are hired with the same first date of service. So my recommendation is for approving this resolution.
Do we have questions from the board?
My only question is this resolution under the same criteria as last year's resolution?
Yes.
Did we need, so no need for change. And when you, this is curiosity, take these about, I'm just going to assume that you work with our bargaining units to help determine it so everyone has buy-in.
They were given us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Questions from the public? Do we have a motion?
So moved.
I'll second.
Jeremy and Claudia. Student recommendation?
Aye.
Roll call?
Aye.
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 Aye. And the next one is 26-15-16.
Sorry. Oh, so this one.
Dr. Lawson, did you raise your hand? I'm sorry. No. Okay.
So this one goes hand in hand with that last one to approve the determination of K-12 district needs. So this is in order for us to retain employees that might have specialized skills in hard to fill areas, especially around the area of being bilingual educated.
Questions from the board? Questions or comments from the public? Okay. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Jeremy?
Second.
And Dee Dee? Student recommendation?
Aye.
Roll call.
Aye.
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 Aye. And now we will reconvene to close session, and the meeting is adjourned.
My leg was going to die once I had it. Like, I'm up over here, like, I'm going like this. I have to keep it moving. I'm on top of that. What do you mean there? Got it. I rolled over on top of it. Well, and you know, then as you get harder, the much downer you get, and it just gets worse. You know, okay. Like, because then you have to do it. I went to the day I just got wrong. My whole leg is like going nuts. Well, the chocolate. Yeah, I've got to bring the chocolate back. I know I was going to stop
chocolate
it now.
House.
I ate two pieces and brought home a sugar.
Okay, that was smoother.
Yes.
I'm getting the hang of it.
Yeah, you're getting the hang of it.
Like, still, I think I'm actually starting to understand the whole idea behind it.
I know it's pretty fast.
You know,
while.
Like it yeah. just occurred to me. It just clicks. Oh, yeah. We ask questions and then they ask questions and then they
there's
get to comment so that we get.
Oh, oh,
we're
really
not supposed to eat the side effects.
Right.
We hear from them.
Well, you know what George Wiley said? He in
SLV, he said there's no conversation about anything until somebody moves, makes a motion. Because he says, until you make a motion, you're not supposed to talk about anything.
Except
what if it's just a presentation? Yeah.
And sometimes it's
just, I like our way.
Sometimes we want to have a discussion before we make that motion.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Yeah.
Right, I know. That's how it's supposed to, that's the official thing, but it doesn't always work out.
So I got to bring the candy back before I go.
It helped. Where did Nancy go? Okay, this is Nancy and Chris.
Wow,
somebody stayed.
What's wrong?
I'm tired of sitting.
What do you want? What are you trying to do?
This has to go to Chris.
This goes to Chris.
Has to Nancy. Where's Nancy? Got it. I put the phone number in yours, Chris.
Ooh, thank you.
And this goes to Nancy.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm so happy I have to borrow one.
You are going to be a busy man again.
Okay.
Yeah. We do the same thing. Same joke as we go back home.
And you give that to Nancy, right?
Each every day.
It's okay. No, I'm just glad that we're doing it. I knew what else to say.
Well, you were the first one that told me about it, and that's why.
Oh, this is fine. I'm just glad it's happening. So
we had a very interesting conversation about sex.
Good work, Jimmy.
Oh, hold on, yeah.
Great presentation.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're getting those buses.
Yeah.
Do you happen to know how much those buses are?
I do not, but maybe I'm sure Jim could tell you.
I was just curious, like, what a school bus even costs.
Well, those are the smaller ones, mm-hmm. You know, because they're the special buses.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they're not as much as, you know, the larger buses, but still, they're going to be significant.
Yeah. Good. Good work. All right. What's holding up?
Well, Nick, you are going to have a long-time position here. I feel it coming.
Oh, I'm trying to move the...
Where are you going to move?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to get it filmed, yeah. You know, so
I know you are.
Still pushing that. I'll go down this weekend with Molly and them. They're seeing Ellie Ann. I want to see Ellie Ann down there, too. But I'm also going to see a director I worked with over the summer, a friend that I know that's been doing casting, you know, so just...
Uh-huh.
Just, like, continue.
My son is a member of SAG.
Yeah. You mentioned him all.
But he doesn't care.
Yeah.
He doesn't care.
From his younger years.
Yes. It's tough work. Tough business to get into. No doubt about it.
Yeah. But this has all been a great experience because, like, the work I want to do, producing, you know, it's all.
See, now you'll understand a lot more. And you'll understand a lot more about the finances.
Yeah,
and you know everything that goes into making something, mm-hmm. and that it's not just about your artistic vision; it's about paying the bottom line.
Yeah,
of everything, every contractor, every you know, every actor, every food service person, every
because
you know those credits roll on forever with the other people.
Mm-hmm. They certainly do.
Yeah, I'm always amazed when I watch the credits. How many people are mentioned? You know what I mean?
It's like, then what's ridiculous is how many people, like how many artists work on all these big films overseas too?
Yes.
How much stuff you know?
Yeah. Because the costs here are so like everything else. It's really a conundrum, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because I really want things to happen here.
Yeah.
And I think the main problem that we have is that we're no longer an industrial nation. We're a consumer nation, mm-hmm. which is really a problem. I mean, we don't make anything anymore. And so when they say we've created 1 million new jobs, it always irritates the crap out of me when I hear a politician say that because you go, yeah, but all of the engineering jobs are gone and you've created 1 million fast food service jobs. That is not really what we call a job that you can support a family on, you know. And yet, the cost of doing it here just
like you saw those Spurs and Purse projections, it becomes cost prohibitive. Mm-hmm. I mean, at what point do you say, wow, we can't afford to give out these packages anymore?
Yeah.
You know, what do we do about that? I don't know.